Hello and welcome back to another episode of In Check with FinTech. This week we have the honor to be joined by Alex Gessner, Vice President of Onboarding and Integration at Solaris Bank. Alex has over 12 years of experience in financial services and is passionate about technology and digital transformation. She is a great advocate for inclusion and equity and was chosen as one of the 25 Business Insider Future Makers in 2021. Enjoy listening.
Alex, first of all, thank you, for being on the podcast and check in with FinTech. And I know you have been sick, but great to have you now here. Maybe introduce yourself, so this is what we always do in the beginning. And yeah.
Sure. Hi. So my name is Alex Gessner. My pronouns are she and her. I'm the Vice President of Onboarding and Integration at Solaris, which is a Berlin-based fintech that operates in a couple of European markets now. And I look after six teams with 30 people. And we're basically responsible for everything that happens after the sales cycle concludes.
Nice, interesting. I know we have worked also together on this, but maybe we talk about this later on. I know when we go on your profile, Alex, you have a crazy career. You worked in corporate and now in fintech. Maybe, guide us through your career in a few steps, maybe.
Okay. So I basically finished my A-levels. I finished high school and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I also had no money. I did not come from a family where, I could afford studying in Germany. Mm-hmm. Even though technically it's free, there's still a lot of cost associated to it. And that was one part. But the other part was I just really didn't know what to pick. And so I decided to go abroad for a gap year. I went to the UK, to Brighton, with 500 euro or pounds. No, it was really euro in my pocket. And that morning I left, my mom gave me another 500 euro because she's like, it feels like it's not enough. So I started my life in a new country, no job, no flat, and just 1,000 euros to my name, which was either very brave or very silly. I don't know. It worked out for me. And the plan was really just to stay for a year. And the first thing I did was video testing, video games testing.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like run into walls, try to find errors and bugs, basically being paid to play video games.
Nice. Which Who doesn't want that?
Right? It's a very, very good way of making money. It was just very uncertain. It was all on freelance basis and you kind of didn't know at the beginning of the month what you would have earned by the end of the month. And that's a little difficult when you're trying to be like a responsible adult. And so I applied at Amex. And I really think this would not have happened like this in Germany. It's just a different thing in the UK where there's also a class system and there's also discrimination of other kinds going on. But there's not really so much attention on whether you have studied or whether you have gone through a formal education and Ausbildung in Germany. Or whether you have none of that. No one ever asked me why I don't have those things. And in Germany, that's super uncommon, right? Like in Germany, anywhere you go, I mean, you are in recruiting, not having either a bachelor or a master's degree or a doctorate even, and not having done a formal education is pretty rare and pretty weird. People would say what's up with you? Why have you never learned anything?
Yes, sadly.
And also when I started at Amex, I thought I'd only stay for a year, which by the way, is how a lot of people started Amex in Brighton and they all stay for longer than a year. I didn't have a long-term plan, which maybe isn't so surprising given that I didn't even have a long-term plan for leaving the country. But what ended up happening was that there was always something that I still was interested in, that I wanted to do. There's always a new opportunity. Always some way to be challenged. And I ended up spending 12 years in that same company, in the corporate world at Amex. And it didn't feel like 12 years at all. I had such a good time there. I had some really good leaders and some really terrible ones, but the good outweighed the bad by a lot. I had fantastic colleagues. I learned so much. I moved departments and countries because I came back to Frankfurt with Amex. And I often say that in a way, I grew up at Amex, my first job that I started when I was 19, 20. Well, it wasn't my first job, but it was my first real job. And it's a huge part of my working life.
Crazy, 12 years. I mean, you know, looking back, I think everybody I know, you know, looking at my parents, they had jobs for like 20 years. I think this was kind of, you know, a thing. If you look now, me working in recruitment, I see people 2 years, 3 years, even one year, you know, it's more a thing now. Like if you stay longer, people ask you, what's wrong with you? You know, why have you stayed so long there?
Are you not interested in developing yourself?
Exactly. Which I think is even a thing. I mean, I think it's great if you stay so long at the company, you know, and, but I mean, now you work at Solaris Bank.
Yes.
And how did this happen? Like, how did you change, or like, how did you want to go into fintech?
Yes. So after that boomer move of staying at a company for so long, I wish I could say this next move was planned, but very little in my career has been like a master plan that I follow. My rule is to say yes to big opportunities, especially when they represent big changes and when they're way out of my comfort zone. So Amex is a great place to work. I stand by that. But of course, a company with like 60,000 something employees that is run very centrally from New York and London comes with its own kind of challenges, like speed of decision or implementation, crisis of bureaucracy, and so on.
Mm.
And me, I have a lot of energy. People often say that, like, that's my brand, right? My energy and my enthusiasm is my brand. And when this opportunity came up, I thought it could be very interesting to work in such a different environment for a change, to work in a scale-up that has much leaner processes and faster time to market. I'm very impatient and more of a try fast, fail fast kind of person. And I wanted a change because as much as I loved Amex, there were also things that drove me really, really wild with frustration. For example, you spend 2+ years and a lot of effort, like 133 presentations to various people to convince them to just get a pilot project started because there's just so many gateways and hoops that you have to jump through. And I felt that maybe using that same energy in a place that has a little bit faster decision-making, hopefully, could give you more impact, more results and faster results for your effort. And it's still a very heavy heart that I left. 12 years is a long time, but I was very excited. And that's how I ended up at Solaris.
Interesting. And was it easy for you to adapt to a different culture? I mean, 12 years, I think it kind of burns into like who you are, even though, no, I mean, I now see your jumper. So the people who don't see it, Alex has a very crazy jumper on, which represents her personality. But I think it's also like, you know, like just like who you are, like how would like, did it, like, was it easy for you to adapt to like a fintech culture? Because back then, you know, Solaris Bank, you know, you started like very like little people and now you are, you know, a lot of people joining like Solaris Bank.
Very, very true. So just for the listeners, it's colorful. That's all it is. I'm not yes. wearing like a rabbit onesie, although if you wear a rabbit onesie, that's also fine. You do you. Just a very colorful thing. So when I joined, Solaris was already a scale-up, right? It was already out of the startup shoes and had something like 450 employees. Now we are around 800. And I found it quite easy to adapt to the new culture because I'd worked with Solaris before on a project. So I knew a couple of people, I knew the flow a little bit already, and it was what I was looking for, right? I was really wanting to move into a place where it's a bit more dynamic in terms of how quickly we get to actually try things out, even small things. And so that was fantastic. That was really great. I loved it. I was a little overwhelmed by everyone's energy. Like when your brand is energy, it's easy to stand out in most corporates. In a scale up, everyone has a lot of energy, which means we started a lot of things. Like you just had a good idea and you ran with a project, basically, which is really, really cool. But at the same time can also mean you have like, you started 50 things and you finish only one or two, but you still get a lot of learning. So I actually found that cultural shift to be a lot easier than the cultural shift from moving from Brighton to Frankfurt. that felt with the same company, that almost felt like completely different companies. But starting in a scale-up, or at least this scale-up, was super easy because people are just, they have such a will to win. They have such a will to do things and to drive things that you'll always find supporters for your cause. And that's been really refreshing that you kind of just get to do things. And half of them, they don't work out, but you've created so many learnings on the way that you already grew.
Crazy, nice. And would you say that the corp world could learn anything from the fintech?
Yeah, I think they definitely can learn from each other, right? And I, of course, I speak of one corporate and one fintech that I've worked in. It's not super representative. Maybe a lot of you work in very different corporates and fintech companies, and that's very valid. But for me, one of the things that the corporate world is different or can learn is really that speed that I just mentioned. It's really the biggest difference. And of course, it comes with difference in size and tenure, right? Amex has been around for 150 plus years, is operational in over 110 countries. That comes with certain admin and coordination that here is managed very, very central. Then when I joined at Solaris, we looked after one country. Now it's five, with a much more local approach. So of course that enables faster decision-making by default. It's not, not a choice where one says, oh, but we want to be slow. It's simply in order to give the same kind of quality to your customers and to still make sure you adhere to all the rules. Of course, that becomes more complicated the bigger you get and the bigger your scope is. But I still think there's a middle ground where you could enable, you know, faster decision-making. And at Solaris, you know, I have direct access to our C-level, including our CEO, anytime I need something. And there's just this willingness to do things rather than discuss them forever. And new ideas are definitely also welcome at Amex. The process to get there, to even start like a pilot or an MVP, took, for me, a long time.
And what you say, maybe we jump into like a more sensitive topic, but would you say that decision making was different maybe back then, maybe not now, I don't know this, of the gender you had working in a corporate?
That's a good question. My own decision making or other people's decision making around me, or decision making in general?
Maybe in general. I think that's more, you know, like, yeah.
That's a good question.
Because for me, you know, if you ask me, corporate seems so, I mean, my dad works in corporate or has been working in corporate, and this was only white men, you know, so it was very different. He worked in a bank, it was very traditional. If I see him now, he hires more women, which is great, but I can only imagine that decision-making is or was different back then, maybe for a woman, I don't know.
I can say that's been a thing at Amex. I know what you mean, and it's a very good point that I think applies, especially in Germany, to a lot of small and medium-sized enterprise. Amex at the heart is an American company, and a lot of the values come from the US just being, I want to say, 10, if not 15, 20 years ahead when it comes to diversity. And diversity in all its dimensions, right? Religion, diversity, sexual identity. Sexual preference and gender identity is what I meant to say. And so it's actually at Amex not been a problem, but here we make the difference of an American company versus a German company or a French company maybe. So I can say that's been the case there. I did have the typical things that, you know, happen to women in their careers where you get questioned a lot and your competence is challenged. And something I heard when I wanted to become a team leader was, well, but you've not been a team leader before, so you can't be a team leader, which is super illogical. It frustrates me more than being something that wasn't said to my male colleagues, right? But it's so illogical. Unless you were born a team leader, how will you have been a team leader before doing it for the first time? Kind of like, you know, you're not a pilot until you start doing your pilot training and then fly a plane. Like, pilots aren't born, I think. And so that's something that has happened to me, of course. And that's not so much to do with any type of company or where they're from, but rather just the unconscious bias that people have. Mm-hmm. It has definitely happened, but it has happened less at Amex than it has in any other company that I've worked in, because they put such an emphasis on true diversity, or rather equity and inclusion, because diversity is just set. Diversity is just a thing that exists. Mm-hmm. I love when companies are all like, oh, yes, we embrace diversity. Well, great. That's just the world, right? We're all different. But inclusion, belonging, and equity, that's really where I think you can tell companies apart. And so definitely not in my corporate experience, but knowing from a lot of friends, very different experience in other companies, of course.
And I know that at Solaris, you have something called Futura, right? Maybe you can tell, you know, the audience quickly what Futura is.
Futura is our intersectional network to shake up the fintech gender gap. Now, what is that? In fintech, women are only make up 19% of the executives in fintech companies, only 11% of the board members, and only 1.5% of fintech founders are women. It gets worse when you're a woman of color. Only 0.5% of venture capital goes to women of color. So clearly this space has a problem. Another thing is, even though women make up 26% of tech staff worldwide, in the layoffs, well, maybe not worldwide, but in a lot of tech spaces that we actually have data on, in the layoffs that we've seen, the mass layoffs we've seen this year in the US and Europe, 45% of layoffs were women, even though they only make up 26% of the working population in tech. So that, of course, shows the big problem that our industry has, traditional banking as well as fintech, and it's not limited to gender, right? It includes already thinking just in a binary gender, right? What about non-binary people? What about buildings not even having accessible floors or accessible bathrooms? It's all a statement or a lack of awareness of how who you are as a company attracts who you want to work with. And so Futura sets out to challenge all of that. Small challenges, we like them. And the special thing about it is it's employee run. We only exist for about 2-ish years, or even just 1.5 years. And already it's a brand that people know even outside of Solaris. Inside of Solaris, we have achieved 10% more women being hired in 2022 compared to the previous year, and 43% more women promoted, not more than men, more than women in the previous years. So that shows, we have a number of initiatives, but that shows the impact we have within the culture of a company is real, is measurable, and is not just, you know, hey, we get together and drink, I don't know, drinks and have pizza and talk about the status quo, which is also totally fine for people to work in networks like that. But we're having a real impact, which isn't always easy. So it's nice to see those numbers that show we are in a good trajectory to make this industry better and hopefully be a role model for other industries. I am yet to see another fintech that puts out a diversity report that clearly and sometimes painfully shows how many women were hired, how many we lost in attrition, how many even enter the hiring funnel, how many are promoted, et cetera, et cetera. And what's the makeup of this company? And you know this because we work together, but I task my recruiters, right? I give them a quota. I want to see this and that many women. And it is hard. It's very hard in our industry, but it is possible. Our corporation has showed that it's very possible. So when people tell me, oh, you know, we would like to be more diverse, but there's just no women in the space, or women don't apply, that doesn't fly for me.
I know when we worked, I think it was last summer together, right? It was great when you gave me the task, you want to see 2 women for 1 man, which I think is amazing, and more companies should definitely do this. Has this been, maybe not like for me yet, but in general for Solaris Bank, a challenge hiring people?
Well, the good thing for me is that I'm in a position where I make those hiring decisions. So the challenge usually is with the people, of course, with the recruiting strategy, but also with the hiring managers, right? There's no point if you spend a lot of effort in trying to make women aware of this company, or let's say you're looking at a different target group, right? You spend a lot of money and effort to try and make this company known to people as a great place to work, and then they enter the funnel, but maybe the hiring managers haven't really overcome their bias yet, or haven't really bought into that value of here's how we try to do things differently. Then all of that is for nothing because they'll just sort those people out. And that's a shame. For me, it's not been a problem because I am the manager making those hiring decisions. And it wasn't a problem with most of my team leads either. So it's easier when you're there, but that's a lot of privilege, of course, saying just be the hiring manager, then you can hire whoever you want. It's been a journey. It's been a journey to explain to people that, yes, maybe it's easier to fill your role right now with a man because you have a lot of great candidates. You have a lot of competent candidates and you might want to hire a woman, but you know, the last two application cycles, you didn't have a single application from a woman. But to me, the question is not, okay, well then, you know, how quickly can I hire? But rather, why don't I have good applications? Are we not an attractive place to work? Do we not tap into the right talent pools? Do we not work with the right companies when we work with recruiters that support our goal of diversity and understand it? Do we not challenge the status quo enough? That's definitely been a journey because, of course, everyone wants to fill their roles and needs to fill their roles quite quickly. There's a lot of opportunity cost in having a role open to wait for someone that brings certain characteristics. But it's also what's needed, because if you don't, then that role will be filled for another 2, maybe 3 years, sometimes even longer, and you've just missed your shot and making your team more diverse. So that's definitely been a journey for a lot of people, because most of the hiring managers still are men, and they're very great men. They don't do this on purpose. But again, they look at an application pipeline with maybe 20 men and one woman. And so what happens? It's a very, very simple bias, similarity bias that we look to hire and put people on our teams that remind us of ourselves. And that's very hard to break through, but it's very possible as well.
What is the reason for not so many applications, but in general, like women not entering fintech? I mean, I know so many great women in fintech, but still when I work with clients, it is difficult to find them or like find new women in fintech. Why is that, do you?
I have no idea, because like you, I know a lot of wonderful, great women in fintech. I can't agree that there's not many of them. I think more and more people are pushing into the space because they have role models like Andrea Fernandez and Miriam Wolfhard, and they see these women just be amazing at their jobs and thrive in what is a very, very men-dominated industry to this day, because it's born from a lot of banking and bankers, right? So definitely there's lots of people. I would say sometimes companies overlook internal talent for the benefit of hiring someone new. Sorry, it's my COVID brain talking. For the benefit of hiring someone new. And that can be quite tricky, because the same thing will happen when you hire externals. If you have that spot where you're unable to see the talented people you already have in-house, that same fate is going to befall a new person that comes in. So there, I think, and this is not so much the women, it's the companies and then the people running these companies that really need to work on inclusive leadership, need to work on bias, need to work on identifying the amazing people they already have. Because I don't hear them go, I wish we had more talented men. I guess we have to hire externally because there's no one here, but where are they? Like, always when you flip these statements around, you start to hear how ridiculous they are. I mean, you and me, we know how ridiculous they are, but this is something I often suggest to people who don't really see that, and to ask why questions. Like, hiring managers tend to be clever people. They tend to be highly paid people, and they probably didn't get there just by sheer luck, or so I hope. Mm-hmm. And it always baffles me when they stop asking questions, when it's like, yeah, but Alex, I'm trying to hire women, but you know, women just don't apply. Okay, Why is that the case? Why are we as an employer not attractive? Mm-hmm. Is our working culture maybe not really one that celebrates flexibility, which not just women, also men, also fathers, and a lot of young people are looking for? And if so, why? Like, kids do this all the time. I wish managers did this more often, always asking more why questions as to why a situation is what it is, rather than accepting what we make of it. So we don't see maybe as many women apply to positions as men. And so the conclusion is, well, women don't care about fintech. Well, that's not true. And I wish people challenged that belief more. But also, of course, part of the reason we don't see as many women excited about fintech or banking in general as we maybe see men today traditionally is just because the industry is and has traditionally been dominated by men. Right. Hence, the working culture is very influenced by a lot of decisions that don't come from a diverse table. And we were in the past missing a lot of role models that showed us that there is a different way. Luckily, that is changing. Mm. And I'm very excited to see a lot of amazing, talented women in fintech.
Do you think that a role model for a woman studying in fintech is a crucial point?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of studies that kind of really cement this thesis of if you can't see it, you can't be it. So one, I need to see that it's even possible. But two, I would love for it to be more than just one woman. 30% of women is what, again, studies show is usually the good ratio that starts changing the conversation, that starts changing the culture. And it's very hard, I know from my own experience, being the one woman, the first one or the only one in any room. It comes with so many expectations that you need to fulfill, and you're set up for failure, kind of. So I wish the role model was more than just one. Unfortunately, today in a lot of companies, it is, you know, one person on the board, one C-level, or maybe two. And I think that's extremely important, not just for seeing that it's possible, but also for changing the dynamic a little bit. Like, do we really build, I'll stay in our industry, do we really build products for everyone if we have 90% or 100% male teams? If we just have men on the teams, maybe they're even all from the same background, maybe they're all white, maybe they're all from Germany, maybe they all have like a university degree and they come from, you know, a social class very different from mine. Do we really build products for everyone? And again, diversity is not just gender, but women are 51% of the world. So if we exclude 51% of the population in our products, is that really the best thing that we can do? Is that really somewhere where I want to work? Those are some questions that I ponder, at least.
Are you struggling to plan your hiring strategy for 2023 in today's market? PCN is here to help. We offer a step-by-step consultation to provide tailored solutions to improve your hiring plan. Contact us today by visiting teampcn.com/contact-us to schedule your consultation and let us help you be ahead of your competition.
Well, Alex, what can fintechs learn from corporate and vice versa? What is your take on this?
Again, my experience is not super representative because I've only worked at one corporate and one fintech or startup, but what I think a lot of corporates that I have known and learned is agility, and especially in Germany, a better culture around making mistakes and failing. Because corporates, they find solutions often like this. You find the problem, you discuss the root cause of the problem, 20 weeks at least. You have a group discussion, you figure out, you know, possible solutions, you meet with the boss, you get department approval, you introduce the solutions to a wider group, there's a million more approvals that you need, you report effectiveness, and so on and so forth. And you're kind of in this bureaucratic cycle. Whereas startups and scale-ups and the fintechs that I've seen, they understand the rapidly changing market a little bit better and the complexity of dealing, especially with new technology, regulations, and competitors. they can adapt more quickly. They also don't have legacy systems that are like 50 years old and have, I don't know, millions of customers worldwide, right? So there's always there's always a reason for this. But also there's just less fear of change because the change is not as big. I find that a lot of fintechs can often be closer to their customer base. Mm-hmm. Again, easier with 3 million than 40 million customers or whatever. But with everything that's going on in this world, with globalization taking center stage, right? Agility should be more of a main focus for the big companies. These businesses need to adapt more quickly, adapt quicker, fail quicker, and get up quicker. And they've got the resources to do it. So it's to me always mind-boggling that they don't do it. Some corporates have venture departments, or certain sections are run as if they're their own companies and not, you know, a department of a bigger company. And there, that works already quite well. Corporate Rebels is a great book that I can recommend to our listeners, and it highlights how some corporates have been able to adapt the best of both worlds or several worlds. Because of course, being a corporate has its own advantages. Sometimes it is good not to be so fast and jump on everything or be on the forefront of everything and invest a lot of time and money only to then see the trend changes after 6 months. For every 50 things that corporates start, they finish a lot more than the startups do. I mentioned this number earlier. It just takes them longer. And established processes make sense, especially in highly regulated industries like ours. This is where corporations have a big advantage that, you know, fintechs and startups in general can learn from, because these big, knowledgeable legal and compliance teams that corporates have access to means that they usually keep their license to operate. They know exactly what requirements they need to fulfill and when. And so they have plenty of time to build good processes and roll them out, especially when you have to deal with, you know, 50 plus countries and their regulations. Whereas a lot of the startups that I've seen, they were sometimes almost surprised by regulation, which is really funny because those tend to not happen overnight. There's usually like years of advanced notice. And that's definitely something that startups can learn, because structure and certain processes aren't always the worst. So I don't think either one is better, but I think there's a lot to be learned from each other. And again, Corporate Rebels, great book to see how some companies have done that.
Well, I've just wrote down the book. Definitely gonna order it on Amazon now. Well,
it's an amazing book. I hope our listeners enjoy it.
Yes, I will enjoy it too, hopefully, yes.
Do you think that, I mean, you know, fintech is like evolving and it's growing, which I think is great. And I think we have a good future. Do you think that that companies need to look more on numbers in terms of when they hire now? Is this crucial for us in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it is crucial always to quantify your bias and quantify where you want to go to, because if we keep going as we have been going, if we don't introduce diversity as a KPI that we measure like revenue, like cost, like many other things, then we're going to see extremely little progress. And it doesn't matter if it's a quota for hiring or a quota for interviewing from certain diversity dimensions, or if it's like a policy that says you have to have succession planning, and for every man that you have in your succession planning, you also need one woman or one non-binary person and a woman. Or if it's something like, okay, when this person leaves, when this position frees up and it's a woman, we make sure that another woman follows in her spot, because also that's something that happens. The very first time a woman is in a higher seat and she vacates that seat, it's usually then she's replaced with a man, and then there goes all of your diversity again. So I think numbers are key to identifying the problem that you have and showing which way you're moving. It's why we release our quarterly report to show where is the journey going. It's not always easy to look at those numbers, but it's the only thing really that changes the makeup and structure of how you run things, to have the KPI and to link it to a goal. So if we start incentivizing people on building more diverse teams, then we will see change. If we incentivize people to maybe take an unconscious bias training, but really just keep going as they go, then they will continue to do that. And they won't be unsuccessful. We have a lot of fintechs that are very successful. But the question is this sustainable? Like, what I think we will see, right, is a more intersectional future of fintech, or at least that's my wish. It remains heavily digital. It keeps everything that's nascent to this industry. But if we think about where we would like this to go, we've got hundreds of fintechs claiming to be like the next neobank, but their only real USP is that, you know, you don't have to go to a branch. We see only a few companies that are really tapping into markets that have previously been left out. We have Brügge in Germany that aims to make digital banking accessible for older generations. We have Vitamin that wants to make banking more accessible, period, to everyone, to people who have been excluded in the past by it seeming complicated or it seeming like, oh, it's not for you, you know. And here's where the talent comes in, because you can only build those products and services for these target markets and customers with diverse teams, a team of white people that are all well-educated from a certain social class is not going to be the one that finds just the right product for homeless people, or how to include trans people in our banking, how to make it easier for trans people to open a bank account, to have a name card with their true name on it, et cetera, et cetera. And all these other groups that are still completely untapped in, and that is not going to happen if we don't put the focus on that. And one of the ways of doing that is just having a KPI around it and measuring it and treating it like any other company KPI.
Right. Do you think we have to prove ourselves a bit more, especially on this topic, but also maybe, you know, working in general, you know, when you have a man and you're a woman on the team, like, do you think we have to prove ourselves a little bit more to be successful, or to just show, hey, I can do the same as he can?
I think, unfortunately, I don't think we have to. We shouldn't have to. But in reality, this is what happens a lot, because when you're a woman on the team, and many times in our industry, the more senior you go, you may be the first woman there, or you're the only woman there. And sometimes you're even the only person of color there, which is a very similar experience. And it's almost like there's a spotlight on you, and everything you do is scrutinized. We see it in politics, right? We saw it with Jacinta Ardern. We see it with Annalena Baerbock. We see it with women who dare to do things. They are scrutinized much more heavily than most men. Like, some of the stuff our male politicians have pulled in Germany, I don't understand how they're still actively working in that field. And women have to go give up their seat. They are pushed out of it. We have a lot of incompetent politicians on all sides of the gender spectrum, but one gets punished a lot more. There's a punishment for being that first woman, and it comes with having these high expectations, having that spotlight, having to prove yourself as a woman, as a person of color, as a trans person. It doesn't even matter who you are. But as soon as you are outside the norm, it seems like you always have to work harder. And there's a Black proverb that goes, you have to work twice as hard to get half as much compared to a white person. And I find that resonates a lot with me. So unfortunately, yes, we do. Because the bias is so deeply embedded in people. There's a lot of great books that I can recommend on this. And it's extremely unfair. And we need to challenge that all the time when we see it and say, would you have asked a man to prove it first? But the stark reality still is that men often get hired for potential, and women first have to prove that they're able to do something. I see this all the time when I speak up for people that I think should get a chance, for example, a shot at leadership roles. And the question that always is asked for the woman that I put forward, and never for the men, is, yeah, but can she do it? Has she done something like this in the past? Have you already been a team leader, Alex? Because you can't be a team leader without having been one first. And with the men, it's like, oh, I'm sure he'll do a great job. And again, that's not because people are trying to be mean or discriminatory. It is something that is very deep in our reptilian brain, and it takes a lot of work to unlearn those patterns. And I can't wait for the day that more people are willing to unlearn that.
Yeah, I totally agree. for the future, what is the most important thing fintech, yeah, we're speaking about fintech, is important when hiring women? Do you have maybe something in mind?
I think before you even start thinking, oh, I need more women or more whatever, mm-hmm. it's important to ask yourself, or to even ask the women that hopefully you already have, what's good about this place? What makes you enjoy working here? Is this place a good place to work at for women, people with disabilities, non-binary people, mm-hmm. people that maybe not stay in Germany, because we're both in Germany right now, and mm-hmm. we're talking about the German fintech bubble. People that aren't maybe born in Germany, or German mm-hmm. isn't their first language. And a lot of fintechs will tell you, oh, it's so diverse, you got people from 60 countries. And I'm like, great, that's great. So you understand where talent is. But then if your makeup is, for example, 30% women, or 20%, 30% people that aren't from Germany or Europe, does that translate up the pyramid of hierarchy? Or do you have a gap where you happen to have the people, but their progress is much slower than their white or European colleagues, or men colleagues in this case? So I think that's the first thing. First, you need to figure out, am I even a company? Is this a place where women want to work? Because if no, then you need to fix that first before you go out and try and hire people, because they're just going to leave. People are very clever. And it's not just women, by the way. A lot of men look for that diversity. A lot of people mm-hmm. under 40 got the number, but there's a study. I don't remember how many people, but 60% of those people under 40 did not want to work in a place that isn't diverse. And not because they, you know, love people and they want to be all around great people, but because they know the more diverse the place is, the better it's for everyone.
Is the team culture also different? Do you see, I don't know how it is in Solaris Bank, but maybe because your team is made, I don't know if it's more diverse, but working out in Corp, is the team culture different when there's more diverse people on the team?
Totally. Yes. Totally. And in a good way for everyone. And diversity is not always comfortable. Sometimes it is uncomfortable. Sometimes it's messy to work on making sure every perspective is heard and making sure you do the right thing. But it's so valuable, because I feel like in diverse teams, everyone can breathe a little bit more. We'll turn this around for those people that maybe go, what are these two women talking about? Like, what the hell is going on here? I've got no idea. I'm so happy. So turn it around and think about, imagine you're a man. Imagine you're in a team full of men. How many men do you know that don't subscribe to the traditional, maybe more conservative values of what a man is? You know, is a man? I don't agree with this, by the way, but I think a lot of people would say, you know, well, he's the breadwinner of the family, should be the decision maker. He's strong, like he takes care of everyone. And that sounds quite exhausting to me, because that's a lot of pressure. And usually that pressure comes with, well, you know, he's just a doer. He doesn't talk about like feelings and stuff. He just gets stuff done. And what happens in that kind of view people have of people, or society kind of expects you to work in this way, is that men who don't fit that mold aren't appreciated as much as men that do, and they don't have mm-hmm. it as easy. And they maybe sit on a team that, you know, I'll take an example. I don't think it always applies, but let's take a sales team and just has men that need to be very competitive in their role, or a lot of men at least are, when you think of the typical salesperson today. I know so many salespeople who are not into this aggressive, dynamic, we're all rock stars, we're all superstars, you know, we go out and hunt opportunities kind of stuff. And they don't feel well in that, but they also don't have a way of speaking up, because it's just expected that this is the way it is. Whereas when we make space for more perspectives, for maybe men from a different culture, or just men who don't subscribe to this ideal, the conversation changes. And the people who like to be this competitive, this assertive, this dynamic, it's not to their detriment. They can continue to be that way. We just open the corridor a little bit to have more perspectives around the table and to allow people to be themselves. And when people feel that they can be themselves, their work inevitably is so much better. And so to me, diverse teams have been a blessing. And the teams I have most enjoyed working with, they have also been my most successful teams. And it definitely changes the culture for everyone, for the better.
Yeah, I mean, I can also a different topic, but also about myself. We are two men, two women. It just changes everything, you know, like you, of course, I don't know, speaking for myself, I don't need to prove myself, but what we said, you know, it's always different. I work in sales, you know, it's yeah, just a different feeling. But maybe, I don't know if we, you know, to wrap this up, do you, what is the future for fintech and diversity? Do you have a take on that?
The future of fintech is intersectional.
Mm-hmm.
It remains heavily digital, like I said earlier, right? But I gave a keynote a couple of weeks ago and I asked people if they ever stopped using a service, this was not limited to finance, because it did not align with their values, or if they ever considered stopping to use a service because it doesn't align with their values. And over 80% of the hands shot up. A lot of them have even stopped using traditional incumbent banks because there the idea of future is that there's Wi-Fi in branches. And like these people, including myself, we don't want to go to branches or using crappy apps, you know, using an app and it takes me 20 minutes just to do a bank transfer because the feature is so hidden and I need to enter a million details. That's not going to work. And I think what we will see is a consolidation of this market. Incumbents will remain, the big banks will remain, but many of the new fintechs, those that will survive, will have fantastic apps that have a great interoperability with other features or products or apps that they use. We'll see a lot more embedded finance where the act of paying happens more in the background. It doesn't really happen anymore with me, you know, selecting the payment app on my phone or getting the card from my wallet. It'll be a lot more native to whatever service you're currently using. And it'll be the ones, this brings me back to diversity, that solve a problem for their customers. And this is where fintech have a unique standing, of course, because it's a lot easier when you have 3 million customers versus 40 million customers to really understand their needs. And the ones that figure out a way of opening up banking are the ones that are gonna stay. And that's where intersectionality comes in. For example, I'm working on a white paper right now about women and financial products, and why women use financial products less than men, and how products need to work and need to be in order to attract women more. And sometimes it's marketing, but sometimes it's also really the customer base that you're looking at. So we have a deep dive on trans women and on people with a migration history or a migration background. And a lot of people with a migration background, they don't trust traditional incumbents. And why would they? They have faced discrimination probably at every turn. I'm married to a woman. When we bought an apartment together, it was ridiculous. People wanted to speak to my husband, even though they had the documents in front of them. And that's nothing compared to the discrimination that people of color will feel. But what we found in our research is that rather than relying on maybe financial advisors and the banks, people that have a migration background tend to look to their peers to get recommendations on good banking because they can't be, you know, they can't be arsed to go somewhere and be treated badly. They want to be treated like every other customer, big surprise. And there's companies out there, fintechs and incumbents, that have not figured that out. So you're alienating that group of people. Are you going to be the company that builds an inclusive product if you don't have a single person of color in your team or in the decision maker seat? Probably not. So the intersectional future of fintech will be more diverse teams that look at these verticals more, that provide a value to people that were previously excluded from banking or make it really hard to feel like banking is for you. And it's still going to take a couple of years, I'm afraid, but I can't wait for that because the company that pulls that off in a good way is the one that I'm going to. And I know a lot of people will too.
Well, I can't wait either. So I'm very looking forward in Solarisbank, but in general, what fintech brings. I mean, I'm coming into 2 years now, so I'm looking forward what will happen. And well, thank you, Alex, for like, you know, giving us your thoughts, your opinion, your background even. And yeah, I think it's becoming more and more popular, even though a lot of people speaking about diversity, but I think it's, you need to, you know, there's no way around it anymore. So
no, and we're kind of already a little bit late to the party. So
exactly,
if you haven't figured out that this is new, good luck still running a business in 10 years. If you're on the journey, well done, and excited to see what you'll build.
Yeah, that is
Thank true. You for having me, Jackie.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you. And yeah, maybe I see you soon in Berlin.
I hope so. See you soon.
See you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of In Check with FinTech. If you enjoyed this episode, hit the like button and leave us a comment below. We'll be having more industry leaders soon, so don't forget to subscribe as well in order to stay updated with the latest episodes of our podcast.